Welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where it's all about smart, efficient training so you can crush your cycling goals. And now, your host, Coach Rob Manning.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to episode number 59 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where we make real science real simple. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and I've got a great show for you today. Full of all kinds of great information, we're going to be talking about the performance management chart as it relates to cycling, fatigue, fitness, form, and all kinds of other good little tidbits, a few things on how to use it, things it can and can't do, and a couple of pitfalls to look out for. But first, a couple of announcements. Website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, the episode show notes receptacle, my online downloadable training plan store is all available at tailwind-coaching.com. And the podcast show notes for this particular episode of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast are at tailwind-coaching.com/59. That's the episode number 59. If you're heading on over to the website to look at any of that stuff, the blog, the episode show notes, or the online training plan store, don't forget while you're there, sign up for the Tailwind Coaching newsletter, tailwind-coaching.com/signup, S-I-G-N-U-P. Share that with your friends. That'll get you, upon signing up, free coaching advice, free workouts, fitness information, some special offers, and even a freebie one-month training plan. And that's all delivered to your inbox along with weekly updates as to what's going on Tailwind Coaching. If you need to get a hold of me, you can contact me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can follow me by clicking any of the icons in the upper right-hand corner of the website at tailwind-coaching.com, which includes Strava, Stitcher, Facebook at the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, at coachrobdc on Twitter, Podbean, all kinds of other places like that. I implore you, if you enjoy listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, head on over to iTunes and give me a 5-star rating if you like what you're hearing. Every 5-star rating helps me move up the rankings, the podcast rankings. The higher up the rankings I get, the more visible the show is and the more people actually get this information. And the more people that get this information, the more people get to enjoy riding their bike by going faster, being stronger, being fitter. So, and that's really what the Tailwind Coaching Podcast is all about. Feel free to share this with your friends, especially hit the like, the share, and the Twitter share button on the left-hand side of this post. Check out my online training plan store. Online training plans, but it's in the middle of summer. Well, cyclocross is coming up, and it's never too late to start building some summer fitness. So I've got complete training solutions for all of your major training season goals, grand fondos, races, rides, group rides, general fitness, and of course, don't forget to take advantage of my training plan support, which is a way to get a coach for a small percentage of what it would normally cost. Your average coach runs you about $100 to $150 bucks a month. Here's the deal. You buy an off-the-shelf plan from me from my downloadable training plan store. You add the training plan support option. I coach you through that training plan. I help you adapt it to your goals. I help you move workouts. I even give you coaching advice like I would any of my one-on-one coaching clients. And that's 30 bucks a month. 30 bucks a month. That's a third to a fifth of the cost of a regular coach, folks. So think that through. If you're looking for the one-on-one Cadillac coaching experience, go ahead, shoot me an email, coachrobdc@gmail.com, and we'll talk it over and we'll see what we can do for you. And of course, if you do head over to the website to check out the blog or the show notes or the downloadable training plans, I do ask you to visit my sponsors. They contribute a few pennies to the hosting and bandwidth costs when you click through the links on the menu bar and you purchase any items from them in no uncertain order. Road ID is able to speak for you when you are unable to talk. The Sufferfest, click in the crying eyes for the training videos of a lifetime, especially if you like UCI road races. U.S. Wellness Meats for grass-fed, hormone-free proteins. The Bulletproof Exec, full of biohacking goodness. I'm a huge fan of Bulletproof coffee, by the way. Coach Rob's Amazon store for recommended training tools, Garmin devices, recovery devices, supplements, etc. And of course, Exos Nutrition, high-quality nutritional supplements designed for health, well-being, and improved performance. And of course, as always, for those of you who are loyal listeners of the podcast, you'll know there is a discount code available at the end of the post on the website, tailwind-coaching.com/59, and that will be able to take a discount off any of my downloadable training plans. So if you're looking for something, head on over to the website, like the post, and you get a nice discount. All right. Now, let's get into the meat of our discussion today, which is going to be understanding the performance management chart. All right, what is the performance management chart? This is a question I get very, very frequently, both from those that I directly coach, from people who are just listeners to the podcast, whether they are customers of mine, whether they're just readers of the blog. I get a lot of information, a lot of people asking about the performance management chart. Performance management chart is simply basically a metric for measuring and evaluating fitness trends over time. I believe it originally came out with Training Peaks WKO. WKO, of course, is somewhere in limbo between 3 and 4. I currently have 3 on my HP desktop, and I also use Golden Cheetah. Golden Cheetah has a couple of options for that as well. I know Training Peaks Online, you can use a performance management chart. I'm not entirely sure if you can use it with just heart rate monitors alone. Perhaps a listener can correct me with that. It's been a long time since I've used Training Peaks Online, and mainly for the fact that I just really don't care for it in comparison to Golden Cheetah. Other things that are out there, I know Golden Cheetah will do Training Impulse for heart rate monitor only, as opposed to having to require you to have a power meter. Sport Trax, I haven't talked about in a long time, but a company that has a really pretty good performance evaluation suite, and at one time was able to do Training Impulse with heart rate as well as power, but I don't know if they still do that. I actually have not heard much from Sport Trax in quite a while, and essentially when they went to a paid model, I had found Golden Cheetah about that point. So the performance management chart basically is just going to be your lifeline to decide and show what kind of efforts you are doing and how those efforts are impacting your fitness. Now, here's a caveat already to that performance management chart. And I'm going to say this right now, and we're going to come back to it, I'm sure, later on down the line, that not all human performance can be distilled down to a set of numbers. All right. Human bodies and human performances are a very, very complex system of ever-changing interconnected variables. So just because you're seeing something on a performance management chart does not necessarily mean that is going to be the gospel and the way it's actually going to be. The performance management chart is more used as a tool to evaluate your progress, how you are progressing, as in what terms are you progressing in? Are you progressing quickly, slowly, too fast, too slow, etc., etc. It can also be used as a planning tool, but we'll get into each one of those a little bit as we go along here. The main constituents, however, of the performance management chart that most people just don't understand what to do with is all the data that goes into it. Now, it's also worth mentioning that a performance management chart is only as good as the data you put into it. Okay, so if, for example, you're one of these guys that likes to go out and ride, and you like to go out and ride, as they say, blind or naked, and not take any kind of measurement device or anything with you, that could be a bit of a problem, because that will be lost data in your performance management chart, and that lost data will skew the results of that particular chart. Now, in the case of the naked rider, I'm going to say the naked rider, which sounds very creepy, the guy who likes to ride with no Garmin or no recording device whatsoever, it is possible to estimate your training stress and whatnot based on previous rides of similar intensity. However, typically, a ride that is not recorded will end up skewing the training chart in a negative way. Now, in a negative way, I mean numerically decreasing. as opposed to increasing. So the question now remains, what is increasing, what is decreasing, what is training stress, and all that? Let's jump right into this sort of head first. The first thing we'll discuss a little bit about training stress. Training stress score is actually a simple measure of the amount of physiological stress your body is put under during a workout or your body undergoes. So the concept here is if you were to ride at your true, and I do mean your true threshold, your true aerobic threshold, 100% of your functional threshold power for 1 hour, that would be the equivalent of 100 training stress score points. All right. Essentially, a training stress score point is an arbitrary number that tells you, based on a couple of various factors, such as your normalized power for the workout, the intensity factor of the workout, your functional threshold power, the time, how hard you worked during that workout. And there's a number of different scales out there where people will tell you, oh, up to 100 training stress is considered a recovery ride, 100 to 200 training stress is, you know, it a relatively easy, 2 to 300 is hard, and above 300 is like epic. And they'll try to put recovery parameters on those as well. The thing to remember about training stress is a training stress score, excuse me, a little bit of something stuck in my throat here. A training stress score is merely a numerical representation of how much stress your body has been put under during a ride. That's all it is. Okay? There is no representation of how hard that ride was. Now, let me explain that. By saying hard, I'm talking about, did you put in 4 hours at 200 training stress? So 50 training stress score per hour? Or did you put in 200 training stress score over 2 hours and 20 minutes? There's a big difference between the two. And generically, if you're putting in 200 training stress score points over 2 hours and 20 minutes, 2.5 hours, that's a lot harder than putting in 200 training stress score points over 4 hours. All right. The idea being that you have to be working higher up in your threshold in order to pump out some really big power that way and some big training stress score that way. In order to determine how difficult a particular workout is, we don't look at the training stress score itself. We actually look at something called IF, or intensity factor. Now, intensity factor is simply a measure of the difficulty of a specific workout in terms of how hard were you working during that workout. It's really a description of how close to 100% effort your workout was, and that number is actually calculated by dividing the normalized power by your functional threshold power. All right. Now, there are a couple of caveats here as well. And if you're doing very, very short, high-intensity workouts or high-intensity events, the classic being a criterium race, you may very well see an intensity factor above 1.0, okay? And this range is anywhere between 0.7 to 1.1, for example. The really short, high-intensity events, you may find something like a points race on the track being a 1.1, you may find a really solid time trial or an FTP test would be right about somewhere between 0.9899 and 1.01, 1.02. Very even type of effort and very, very close to threshold effort as well. There are a couple of other measures of what you can use to basically evaluate how difficult a workout was. One of them is the variability index, which I'm only going to gloss over here because it's not really pertinent to the PMC, but it is another tool that you may run across. A variability index is simply a measure of how stochastic your power was throughout the workout. So if you have multiple accelerations and then very frequent amounts of coasting, think of a criterium where soft pedal, accelerate hard out of a corner, soft pedal, accelerate hard out of a corner. That's a very stochastic, very punchy, very uneven power profile that will have a high variability index, whereas a really good solid time trial or an FTP test will have a really, really low variability index. And variability index for TT, you're looking right around 1.0 and upwards from there, depending on how punchy or how, you know, stop and go your workout or your racing is. So now that you have a little bit of a primer on what training stress is, what intensity factor is, a little bit of a variability index, now you can evaluate how hard your workouts are. And as a side note, these parameters are easily added to most performance management charts. You're not stuck with the simple three lines. You can add pretty much all this information to a performance management chart. It does get a little cluttered in some cases, so it may be difficult to read, but there is definitely value to it. All right. Now, moving on to the squiggly lines, the things that everybody asks about. Well, I understand you want to keep them going up, but what does that mean? Okay, number one, we're going to start with acute training load. ATL is usually a magenta line on Golden Cheetah or a red line in WKO as a default, if I remember correctly. The red line, the acute training load, acute meaning short term or instantaneous training load, is the amount of training stress you are under, abbreviated as ATL. All right, this is a representation of the effect of your training from the past 7 days. Okay, actually it's 7 to 14 days. It depends on the algorithm. I take that back. A couple of different programs will set a 14-day acute training load, but either way, it's very short term, 1 to 2 weeks. Now, what is the representation of the effect on your training mean? Well, basically, the short version of ATL is your fatigue. It is how tired your body is in the short term. So training goes like this. We go out, we challenge our body outside its comfort zone, hopefully. Hopefully we do. Hopefully we're not just going out and cruising for 3 hours just to rack up 200 training stress, or 4 hours for 200 training stress. We go out, we push our body into zone 5, zone 6, zone 7, well out of its comfort zone. All right, we stress our body. Once we stress our body, it has to recover in order to adapt. All right, the recovery and adaptation process leads to improved fitness. Acute training load is basically a measure of how much stress you have put your body under in the short term. All right, and many people will use ATL and fatigue interchangeably when they discuss their performance management chart or their coaches discuss it with them. Acute training load, of course, is measured in training stress per day, and it is, again, that rolling average, and it's a graph you're going to be looking at to determine really how much stress you've been putting onto your body in the past few weeks. As I noted, if you have a week of huge training stress, for example, say you do 1,000 training stress points in 5 days, you could be averaging maybe over a 7-day period, maybe 180 training stress over a 7-day period, something like that. That's a pretty high acute training load or fatigue load. Once you take some time off and rest, all right, you will see that representation of your fatigue in terms of that ATL line start to drop. As that starts to drop, you will also see an increase in training stress balance, which we'll get to in just a moment. But before we get to the training stress balance part of it, we need to discuss the adaptation part of the performance management chart. Now, I'm not talking about anything that's going to predict how strong you are, how fit you are, but a numerical representation of your fitness can very easily be found in CTL, or chronic training load. This is kind of what happens when your acute training load matures. All right, it's not for certain, that's not a good definition, but it's a definition that most people will understand. Our acute training load is the stress we put our body under in order to cause adaptation. The chronic training load, or CTL, which is almost always a blue graph line, could be thought of as our adaptation. It's essentially a measure of rolling average of training stress per day over a 42-day average, and is really considered your fitness when you view it in context. The caveat here is that CTL is only really a mark of general fitness. Remember, training stress score is irrelevant in terms of how you got there. All right, training stress score is just a number, and you can put on 200 points, as I said, in a 4-hour cruise, or 200 points in 2 hours, 2.5 hours of really hard interval work or racing. CTL really is not the best thing to look at in terms of fitness, because it's not event specific. It's simply a number. It is measured in training stress per day, and you'll be able to see it climb as you, quote, get more fit. However, it has no bearing on your event-specific fitness, like zone 5 repeatability, zone 6 repeatability, sprint capacity, etc., etc., time trial capacity. It actually may help you with a little bit, and let me explain why. CTL being a measure of fitness can tie in very nicely to functional threshold power in this way. Functional threshold is really how hard you can go before your body turns anaerobic. CTL, or chronic training load, or fitness, is really how long you can go at that functional threshold before your body breaks down. All right. So the two really go hand in hand, and they are very different, but they do go very much hand in hand. What this graph is typically used for, and many times erroneously used for, like I said, is fitness, but essentially, it should be used to determine improvement over a longer period of time. What that means, improvement-wise, is at a certain point, you will see this CTL graph start to climb. That's a good thing, because that means you are, in theory, adapting and gaining fitness. The big problem here, and because most people don't really think about fitness from an event-specific perspective, or from a performance perspective, they just see fitness as, I need to raise that bar, raise that bar, raise that bar, raise that bar. And they fight and fight and fight to really push that CTL line higher and higher. The problem with doing that, the problem with the obsession of seeing that line rise, is eventually your body simply cannot recover from the stress you're putting it under. And that happens to everybody. It just depends upon the point. I've seen athletes that can handle 150 to 160 training stress score day per day as a CTL measurement. 150 to 160 CTL. That is absolutely massive, folks. That's huge. I have other athletes. I've seen other athletes that they can't really handle more than 70, 80, 90 training stress per day before they really start to feel tired and they really start to burn out. All right. Interestingly, from a coaching standpoint, when I see that an athlete cannot drive CTL higher, that tells me that that general CTL number, and this is something you can look at yourself, when that general CTL number sort of hits a point where an athlete goes, I'm really tired, I can't really pack on anymore, I've got too much at work, I'm too stressed out, my body's just feeling tired, my legs feel heavy, my legs feel like crap, I'm not riding well. You can look at a CTL number at that point, and you can say, all right, that's a fitness level where my body can't handle any further increase in training load. However, what your body can handle is specificity in training load. Now, specificity in training load, because you are typically making the workouts more intense and shorter, you'll see two things happen. One, you'll see that CTL level drop anywhere between 6 and 15 points. However, that does not necessarily mean that you or that athlete will be riding poorly. In fact, in many cases, they'll be riding better, stronger, faster, and more efficiently than they would had they been 15 points higher on the chronic training load. And again, the reason being is by diversifying training, cutting down volume, increasing intensity, you are able to recover better. Your event-specific fitness increases, so your results are better. And because the volume of intensity on your body is less, you feel better. All right. So that's something that you can take away from this. And one of the tips you can use to actually work through your own performance management chart and use it as a valuable tool. The only thing I need to caution you about is you really have to be careful trying to hit that point where your body starts getting tired. If you try to push too far over it, I can almost guarantee you, you're going to overtrain, you're going to burn up, you're going to blow out, your motivation's going to go completely down the toilet, and suddenly you're not going to want to ride, not going to want to get out of bed, and to hell with racing or grand fondos or group rides or anything else, riding a bike sucks. So don't hit that point. Do not chase the CTL line higher and higher just because you think it's going to make you better. It's not the case. Now, training stress balance, which I mentioned earlier. Training stress balance is a rather important measure on the performance management chart. In fact, it's probably the most important measure that you're able to look at on the PMC. TSB, training stress balance, is really your difference between fitness and fatigue. Now, just like I was talking about when you hit a certain point in your CTL plateaus, your chronic training plateaus, you are exhausted, you are tired, you don't want to work anymore, it's hard to do any further interval work. Cut your volume down, increase your intensity, and you'll feel better. Sure, that CTL will drop a little bit, but what happens is your form increases, your training stress balance increases. This is the entire point behind a taper week, folks. I'm basically giving you what to look for during a taper week. All right. In absolute terms, your training stress balance is a comparison of chronic training load and acute training load. All right. It's essentially CTL minus ATL, which typically will give you a negative number. And TSB can go very, very, very negative. I've seen training stress balances in the negative 60-70. All right. High numbers, especially following big, heavy, hard blocks of exercise or heavy, hard blocks of workouts. The reality behind this, of course, like I mentioned, is TSB is your measure of form. How well you've balanced the challenging your body by subjecting it to training stress, and recovering, all right, causing it to fatigue, and how your body is recovered, improving your fitness, all right. Carefully evaluating training stress balance is a great way to determine when you're ready to peak. I did reference in one of my past podcasts, I believe it was Analyzing Your Cycling Season, podcast number 52, tailwind-coaching.com/52. When you go back and you look at your season successes and your season failures, one of the things that you absolutely need to review are the training stress balance numbers immediately preceding your events, both good and bad. But you really need to pay more attention to the good ones, obviously. What you want to do with this case is look at the training stress balances that you went into the event on. So, for example, if I know I performed very well in a race at a -5 or -6 training stress balance, which for me is very true, I tend to do very, very well with a little bit of fatigue in my body. Some people do very well with very high positive training stress balances. It all depends on the person. So if I go back and look at my successful races, or my successful events, I know that my goal during a taper or during a peak week is to cruise along and hit that -5 or -6 training stress balance basically on the day of the event. And doing so, I can actually start to plan my workouts. How am I going to go about that? How much training stress do I need? What kind of interval work do I need? How long does it have to be? How much of it? Et cetera, et cetera. All right. The problem is, like I mentioned early on, the human body cannot simply be reduced to a bunch of numbers. All right. Training stress balance alone, even if you have a perfect training stress balance for you, there's absolutely no guarantee that you will perform well. There's a much higher chance that you'll perform well, but as I mentioned, the human body is a very, very complex, interconnected mass of varieties of systems. All right, and everything outside your environment, or outside our internal human body environment, can play a part in our performance as well. Anything from, did you have a rough day at work the day before? Did you have a fight with your wife the morning of the race? Were you late getting to the race and your pre-race routine was thrown off? Did you not get a chance to warm up? Was it 20 degrees hotter than you had anticipated it being? Did you not eat well the night before? Did you drink the night before when you typically don't? All right, any of these things can combine to derail a good performance according to a training stress balance. Just because it's predicted to be good does not mean it will be good. However, as I've mentioned before, this is the point of keeping track of all of your training metrics. And all of your training metrics, I mean the temperature of the race or the event, what you ate the night before, what you had for breakfast that morning. Did you have a cup of coffee? How long was the drive? Did you stretch before you got onto the bike? How long did you warm up? What was your warm up? All right. All of those things should be documented so that when it comes time to evaluate your performance and say, I do really well at -5 training stress balance, and I also have to make sure that I warm up for 25 minutes and I have to do some really high leg speed, high cadence work first, and then I have to get a couple of really short 10-second max efforts in. Now you're taking as much guesswork as possible out of your performance, and you're basically recreating the situations that have given you a high performance result in the past. All right. So the take home here is, remember that TSB is not the only predictor of your high quality performance. There's too many other factors that go into it. It's like, you know, heat, hydration, sleep. The best thing you can do is go listen to that podcast, number 52, about analyzing your season, and make sure you know exactly what you have to do so that you can set yourself up for a peak performance. All right. That is really the key for using your training stress balance. And one of the things for basically for using your performance management chart. Now, a couple of other things that don't really fit in elsewhere. Some keys here to avoid overtraining. Overtraining, you really need to keep an eye on that CTL. And again, you really need to keep a diary or a journal or some kind of record of how you're feeling. If you see multiple instances where your chronic training load, say, hits, let's say, 90, and you suddenly start feeling like crap, you get sick, you don't have any power in the legs don't want to turn over, what have you, that's your general rule to back off, all right? That is really your general rule to back off. And as a quick guideline, you can generally say that if you're working with a CTL of under 40, you can generally get away with raising your CTL number by 7 to 9 points per week. As you continue to train and you reach about 60, between 40 and 60, you can generally put on between 5 and 7 points of CTL growth per week. Between 60 and 80, you're somewhere in the 3 to 5 point range. Per week. Once you get over 80, 90, the maximum, unless you know that you can drive it higher, the maximum I would aim to gain in terms of chronic training load on the chart would be a point per week. Generally, the reason why is because the amount of volume and intensity required starts to outstrip the ability to recover, especially for any kind of Joe Sixpack every day. You know, guy who's a Cat 4, Cat 3, whatever, rider, who has a job and a family and kids and a dog they have to walk and a commute to go to work and all that. All of those things are training stress on your body that is not reflected in the performance management chart. And that is actually something that is also worth mentioning and segues perfectly into my next point. The performance management chart really is only, and I have to stress, only a sport-specific variety of data collection. It will only show you training stress and stress. Remember, your body is under constant stress, whether you know it or not. Your body is under constant stress. Stressing out because your boss yelled at you, your wife yelled at you, your kid got a bad grade, you got a flat tire, you hit a deer, whatever. That is all physiological, psychological stress on your body, and that piles on top of your training stress, folks. I said that in the past, and I'm going to repeat it again. All right. The PMC only shows you what your cycling training stress has been. It does not apply to weightlifting, to cross training. You can get it to apply to running and swimming. I'm not even going to get into that because that's an entirely different setup. But the thing you have to absolutely remember is that this is only a representation of the work you have done and the stress you have experienced on your bike, not in the real world. I can't tell you how many times I have worked with athletes. Some stressful life event comes. In fact, one of them that I'm working with right now is having a baby. Actually, they just had a baby. He and his wife just had a baby. And the amount of stress on him right now, aside, completely forget about riding his bike, the amount of stress on him is extreme. Poor sleep, extra hours working, stressing out about being a father for the first time. Not an easy situation to find yourself in. Now, if you pile training stress on top of that, you may find that you can hit 90 chronic training load under normal circumstances. Now you hit 70 and you're done. And I do mean done. You hang the bike up for 2 weeks and you're finished. All right. So bear in mind that the performance management chart can really only be applicable to cycling related stress until we can figure out a way to add daily stress into the performance management chart. We're kind of stuck at that. Although there are some tools and techniques you can use, such as heart rate variability, things like that, where you can determine how ready your body is to accept a training load. That'll be a completely different post or podcast, which I will get to at some point in the future. But that's about it for the performance management chart. I hope you learned a little bit about how to read it, what it can be used for. I'm sure there will be questions about it. Please feel free to ask those questions. Ask them on the forums, tailwind-coaching.com/forums. You can ask them on the Facebook page, the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. You can direct message them to me on Twitter or Facebook. You can even post them in the comments under this podcast show notes, okay? And the show notes for this podcast, again, tailwind-coaching.com/59. So if you have any questions specifically for me, you can, of course, email them to me, coachrobdc@gmail.com. Folks, I want to thank you for listening. I encourage you again, go ahead on over to iTunes, rate this podcast. Please rate the podcast 5 stars so I can move up the rankings. Please like and share with your friends, family, teammates, and group ride buddies. Help make them stronger and help them enjoy riding their bike as much as you do and I do. And I hope that you will ride strong, ride safe, ride happy. Keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down. Use the new information you have smartly and get strong like a beast. Thank you very much again, folks. Again, tailwind-coaching.com/59 for the show notes and your discount. I'll be talking to you really, really soon.